From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
I've got a right to vote in this country. I should have a right to my own reproductive health. I don't bear children any longer, but I am here to my dying day to stand with this governor and these women and men who believe in our rights as human beings.
We were at the dawn of the worst surge to date, and you may remember this is before we had vaccines. We were working against Republican elected officials who told people to defy mitigation efforts. Those lies put people's lives at risk, especially the most vulnerable. Even as my team and I worked 18 hours a day for 9 months straight to fight them.
A state audit critical of the Pritzker administration's response to a deadly COVID outbreak at a veteran's home. We'll discuss that. And the news this week also included a leaked U.S. Supreme Court draft of a decision that could mean the court is about to overturn Roe v. Wade. It immediately thrust the issue of abortion in front and center in the upcoming elections. We'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He's a professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Hannah Meisel is with us. She's NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, Heather Sharon, who covers politics for WTTW and Chicago Tonight. And Heather, it's been a while. Thanks for being back with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
So this week, we heard a lot about what could happen if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and a lot of people now believe that is going to happen. Hannah, let's focus on Illinois. Give us sort of the overview of what it would mean here in the state of Illinois.
Well, at least for now, Illinois, all of our abortion rights access laws in Illinois would remain intact. Democrats, progressive women particularly, have kind of seen this coming. It was 2017 in April, so, you know, a few months into the Trump administration, that Democrats had pushed HB 40. Folks might remember the big fight about over that. That law did two things. It removed the, you know, decades old so-called trigger law we're hearing a lot about in other states. Many states adopted this, but it removed that trigger law. So that, you know, in the event Roe would be overturned, Illinois wouldn't go right back to having abortions be illegal. And the other thing that HB 40 did was it made it so that folks on Medicaid could use their Medicaid benefits to pay for abortions. And in 2019, progressives pushed the Reproductive Health Act, which enshrined basically Illinoisans' right to an abortion into law, and it also eliminated a lot of state laws, you know, kind of antiquated state laws, things on like you needed your husband's permission to get an abortion, a few other things. And then, of course, most recently in the fall, progressives again pushed for the repeal of Illinois' Parental Notification of Abortion Act, which doesn't take effect until the 1st of June, but when it does take effect, folks under the age of 18, they will no longer have to have a parent or guardian notified, you know, so those laws will remain intact, but we are expecting abortion rights advocates are predicting, you know, maybe a doubling of those coming from out of state to Illinois to seek abortions in 2020. That number was about 9,700, and we could see as many as 20,000 per year.
Yeah, Heather, this was something that, like Hannah had mentioned, all these different actions that were taking place by the legislature over the last few years. I think some people probably were not paying a lot of attention to it because maybe they feel like, hey, this is settled law. It's not going to get to that point that these would necessarily have to, or, you know, put Illinois out there maybe as an outlier in much of the Midwest. But yet here we are. Your thoughts on what it could mean for the state of Illinois?
Well, I think you're exactly right, because for many years, at least until the election of former President Donald Trump in 2016, there was the sense that Roe versus Wade had been the law of the land for nearly 50 years, that there was going to be, you know, no appetite to overturn such a longstanding a Supreme Court decision. And I think that that was not accurate. And I think it bears remembering that when Governor J.B. Pritzker ran against former Governor Bruce Rauner, he explicitly campaigned on abortion rights and reproductive health care services for women in Illinois, and vowed to make Illinois the most friendly state in the Midwest for reproductive health. And he has really sort of lived up to those promises, which are now front and center and will give him sort of an issue to campaign on in the general election. However, you know, we heard this week from State Representative Kelly Cassidy, who is really integral in repealing the parental notification law and changing those other laws back in 2019, most recently. You know, her warning was quite stark, because if the Republicans take control of the United States House and the United States Senate and win back the White House in 2024, there will be no doubt an attempt and perhaps a likely success to ban abortion nationally. And then in that case, Illinois' laws basically disappear. They will no longer have any effect. And I think that that is what I heard from a lot of abortion rights advocates this week, you know, a sense that perhaps sooner than anybody thought, that not only was Roe versus Wade, essentially a relic of the past, that the future could be quite bleak, even in states like Illinois and New York and California that have really worked to enshrine reproductive health care in their state laws. It just simply won't matter if this is the start of really a new era of abortion law in the United States.
Yeah, Charlie, maybe for some perspective, you, I'm sure, remember the Roe v. Wade decision probably when it happened, and it's been 50 years, but you were a reporter back then. In a half century since, we've seen, I think, what I would call incremental movement on this issue. Maybe sometimes it's to take a, you know, chip away a little bit at the right of abortion, and then sometimes it's to add a bit more restrictions. But this really is a landmark moment, isn't it, on this topic?
Oh, it certainly is. And for its significance, former Governor Jim Edgar had an interview with Politico the other day, and he suggested that, and this is a quote, abortion is going to suffocate every other issue. It will be hard for candidates to talk about anything else. And he mentioned one of the good things about Roe v. Wade was that it took abortion off the front burner. Now it's the whole burner, he said. And if you look at Illinois history, going back to, well, I started covering state government in 1970 with the Constitutional Convention, and there was no mention at all of abortion. Abortion was illegal in Illinois, as it was in virtually every other state. And so it wasn't really an issue. And then along came Roe v. Wade in 73, and suddenly Illinois was left with no regulation at all. And so the what today would be the progressives and the conservatives at the time had to cobble together a package that would require abortions to be provided by medical folks, for example, so you couldn't go to the corner grocery store and have an abortion, and public health type considerations. And the trade-off was we put in this trigger law that said if Roe v. Wade is ever tossed, then we'll go back to the old law, making it illegal. And so for most of that period, from 73 up until the early 90s, Illinois had I used to look at it as kind of a play acting, because there were zealots on both sides, some very pro-choice zealots, some very right-to-life zealots, but they were in the distinct minority in the caucuses of both Republicans and Democrats. And during most of Thompson's years, what would happen is the General Assembly would pass abortion restrictions, and lawmakers who really didn't care one way or the other could tell their constituents if they were right-to-lifers, yeah, I voted for it. Thompson would veto those bills. They would be overridden. They'd be taken to the courts, and the federal courts would strike them. And there were a whole bunch of them. There was where you had to get the consent of the father, or where you had a waiting period, or where the doctor had to provide all kinds of information intended to make you change your mind. And it was sort of as I say, it was play acting, because everybody knew these weren't going to go anywhere. But a lawmaker could go back and tell his most fervent constituents, yes, I voted for right to life, but it's that darn court that threw it out, and that darn Thompson. That sort of changed when the Casey decision came down. And that was in 1992. And in essence, the Supreme Court upheld, it did not toss Roe v. Wade, but upheld a number of restrictions that Pennsylvania had enacted. And suddenly it became clear that states could chip away at abortion rights. And from that point on, Illinois did not pass any, or pass very few, and none were enacted, legislation that would limit abortion rights to any extent. And so now suddenly, as I say, we're in a position where this is going to be an overwhelming issue. And Edgar also suggested that the impact might motivate younger people, younger women who maybe don't pay much attention to politics, to maybe to get involved and to vote when they suddenly see this is something that is very personal and could impact their lives.
And you're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Heather Sharone with WTTW and Chicago Tonight. Heather, going back on just what Charlie was talking about, Jim Edgar's comments, how this is going to pretty much take up all the oxygen in the room going forward as far as a campaign issue, would you agree with that as far as the at least the governor's race and many of these other races further down the ballot?
So, you know, I think I'm a little bit more skeptical than Charlie is, because time and again in the last 5 years, it seemed like we've heard people say that this is going to be the issue that resets politics as we know it. And time and again, those issues have faded. Now, if there's any issue that has the ability to sort of reset the political calculus, I do believe that abortion is one of those issues. It's just honestly too early to know exactly how this all is going to play out, especially because this is just a draft decision from the Supreme Court. Now, I don't doubt that the ultimate decision in this case, which will be known as Dobbs, will be quite similar, if not exactly what we see in the draft. It's just hard to know exactly how it's all going to play out. You know, it also bears keeping in mind that this is going to be a very weird primary year for voters in Illinois. The primary, which is usually in March, was pushed back until June, late June, because of the delays caused by COVID and the census data. So this is going to be an off-year election at an unusual time, and it will be really hard, I think, for both Democrats and Republicans to turn out their usual voters. And as always, it will come down to turnout. I know it's such a cliche, but especially in this year where there's so much in flux and so much potential for other earth-shattering, you know, changes and revelations to be made, I'm just not certain that how it's all going to play out, because like you said, for so long abortion has been seen as an issue that was settled, and now that it's not, I think both sides of the issues are still really sort of grappling with what that will mean electorally.
Yeah, Hannah, your thoughts on that as far as where people might come down, and as far as when they vote this year, and will abortion be the key decision maker for them?
I think, yeah, for Democrats, I hate to, you know, put it like this in kind of gross political terms, this is kind of an opportunity for them to coalesce around something. Governor Pritzker has been using this as a key campaign issue for months now. And I think that some of his fellow Democrats were kind of rolling their eyes, saying, you know, I'm not sure that this is really the issue that you want to center around, but I guess he was kind of proven right. I don't think a lot of people are expecting that the decision in the Dobbs case, which is what we have here, or at least the draft opinion, was going to fully overturn Roe. I think most folks were thinking it would chip away, it would, you know, be more narrowly focused, but this is kind of as I heard a lot of Democrats say this week, like the worst case scenario. But let's not also forget that it's going to energize the base for Republicans, you know, especially those, you know, core conservatives, the ones who turn out to vote in primaries. You know, it's going to energize that base. I think that's why we see Richard Ervin, who is, I mean, the most tightly scripted candidate I think I've seen in a long time, maybe ever. Not that I've been doing this for, you know, maybe a decade, but like Richard Ervin, who is of course funded by billionaire Ken Griffin, this week said that he would not comment on the draft opinion until the actual opinion came out in June, which, you know, there's a possibility, because the primary is on June 28th and usually Supreme Court opinions come out through the end of June. The real opinion could come out on the 29th or 30th of June, and he could get through this entire primary cycle without saying anything. Obviously, we reporters will try as we might to get him to comment on it. But, you know, it's a difficult position for Illinois Republicans to be in, because, you know, in Illinois, even though, yeah, I think we've seen in recent years more conservatives take the reins of the state central committee and, you know, the party in general, but still the ones who are elected to the legislature are still mostly moderates, who in, you know, other states, I'm not even sure would necessarily qualify as Republicans.
The issue in the primary is it's not that significant for anybody other than Richard Ervin. In that every other Republican candidate is totally 100% committed to outlawing abortion. And they were quick to jump on that position when the draft opinion was leaked. I think where it'll be critical for Ervin is he's got to try and basically be the stealth candidate, not say anything until past the primary. Then he can modify his position. Now that not he's got the Republican nomination, he doesn't have to worry about the hardcore right to lifers that are the base of the Republican Party these days. Now he has to appeal to a more moderate general electorate that polls suggest 60%, two-thirds maybe support a woman's right to choose in pretty much all cases, and do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And he's got to thread this needle, keep his mouth shut until he gets past having to deal with the right wing of the Republican Party. Then he can run and he can position himself as being more moderate than Pritzker on the issue, and try and appeal to suburbanites who maybe don't want to see Roe v. Wade gone, but now that it is, they have to choose who's going to be the governor. So I think it's going to be more important. And as Edgar suggested, it's going to be turnout. And as Heather said, who's going to show up? Are young people who are basically disenchanted suddenly going to say, wow, it's really important that we elect Democrats to protect our right to choose? Or are they going to say, yeah, the parties, they're the same, they're all the same? Because I've heard that from folks that I know that don't see any difference between Republicans and Democrats. And I think this issue might clarify it for some of those people that, yeah, there is really a big difference between the political parties. So as was said, we'll have to wait and see. But I tend to agree with Edgar that this is going to be an issue that's going to totally change the dynamic.
Well, certainly some political fallout from another issue. An audit was released this week that took a closer look at that 2020 outbreak, a deadly outbreak of COVID-19 at the LaSalle Veterans Home. 36 residents there died. And Heather, this audit coming out, also we're going to hear about that, I would think, a lot. Republicans are going to put that out into mailers and TV ads, because it gets to the heart of whether or not Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration has been able to run state government and respond when crises occur. There's really, and that's certainly an area that Pritzker has stressed that he's been able to do. This might chip away at that.
That's right. I think you're exactly right. It undercuts Governor Pritzker's central argument for re-election in these early months, that he helped lead Illinois through the pandemic based on science and data, and that he took the necessary hard steps to protect the most vulnerable residents from COVID-19. And that audit raises a lot of questions about whether the residents of this veteran home, who were, of course, the most vulnerable during the pandemic, were really left behind. And, you know, it also opens Governor Pritzker up to charges of hypocrisy, of course, because there was a big outbreak of Legionnaire's disease under former Governor Rauner, and Governor Pritzker campaigned on that nearly relentlessly, saying that Governor Rauner had not taken proper care of the state's veterans, who in many cases rely on the state not only for housing but also for healthcare and other services. And the audit is really damning when it comes to the fact that, you know, a goodly percentage of the veterans who were infected and then became seriously ill and then in some cases died were infected after state officials knew that there was an outbreak and that the system appeared to break down nearly at every level. So just as candidates like Richard Ervin are going to face a lot of questions on the abortion issue and other issues, you know, including whether President Joe Biden was properly and fairly elected and who he voted for in the 2020 presidential election, all questions Richard Ervin has declined to answer at this point, Governor Pritzker is going to have to account for what his agencies did at the height of the pandemic and whether he acted appropriately in protecting the state's veterans.
Yeah, and I want to hear from both Hannah and Charlie, just a couple of moments left here. So kind of quickly, Hannah, your thoughts on what is the fallout from this audit? And we've been following this issue now for well over a year because we have seen other reports about what happened there. But does this shed some new light?
It does. You know, it was 370 days before this audit came out that the months-long investigation that Pritzker had ordered, I think, about 5 weeks after the outbreak began, came out in late April of last year. An audit that was narrowly focused on just the Department of Veterans Affairs and what was going on at the LaSalle home. It's interesting that this audit that came out this week actually criticizes that investigation for being so narrowly focused. Of course, Republicans also criticized the governor for, he was the one who, was in control of the scope of that audit. And, they basically, their contention is, the governor shielded the Department of Public Health from responsibility when really this audit says they share blame and those in the governor's office do too, and it undercuts some of the claims that were made in that investigation.
Now, Charlie, you've talked about this before. You've said this could be a problem for the governor when he comes up here for re-election. Just about a minute left, Charlie, your thoughts on what we've heard this week.
The report by the Auditor General was very damning of the administration and the way it handled this outbreak. And as people say, ultimately the governor is responsible. And some of the things that were in that, what could be characterized as a cover-up report by the internal inspector general, Frank Maltino, flat out contradicted. One of the things was that Department of Public Health really wasn't aware of what was going on. And Maltino pointed out that the Pritzker administration was monitoring COVID-19 in long-term facilities across Illinois, and it was getting daily reports, including from the staff at the LaSalle home, about what was going on. Maltino said he reviewed scores of emails and determined that the official that was blamed in the earlier review actually reported to public health regularly on the situation from its inception. And when public health didn't act, the audit said this official requested the agency to make a site visit and sought information on on rapid tests and antibody treatments. So as I say, the audit is very damning, and it's going to be a problem for Pritzker in terms of how he administers the state. And it'll be buttressed by reports that are going to come down. I'm pretty sure, Hannah, it wasn't you who mentioned that one of the coming reports is going to be on DCFS, another is going to be on employment security.
Yes, and the big grant program, which was that using federal money to help out businesses that were affected by COVID and the shutdowns.
All right, well, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Heather, let's go to you first.
Well, this week saw a really a landmark event in the long-running saga of the efforts to bring a casino to Chicago. Mayor Lori Lightfoot made her pick, and she wants Bally's to operate a truly massive casino with 170 table games and 3,400 slot machines on what is now the Chicago Tribune printing plant and newsroom in the River West neighborhood, right at Chicago Avenue and Halsted Street. Her decision will kick the roulette ball, so to speak, back to the city council, where it faces a somewhat uncertain future. The casino is expected to bring nearly $200 million in tax revenue to the city that everyone agrees is desperately needed and will help the city pay down its massive pension debt for police and firefighters. One interesting note is that when the mayor made her pick, I reached out to the governor's office about whether he was supportive of this pick, and I literally just heard back, in which a statement is relatively non-committal. He makes sort of no decision on whether that's the right place for this casino and says it's the city's decision.
Okay, Hannah?
Late Thursday, the State Board of Elections campaign reporting system reported that Ken Griffin, who, as we said, is funding Richard Ervin and that whole slate of statewide candidates, kicked in another $25 million. The Pritzker campaign and Darren Bailey campaign jumped on that and said, oh, that means that Irvin's losing. But really, Griffin said it himself months and months ago that he was going to spend big on this race to defeat J.B. Pritzker. So this is entirely expected.
Okay. And Charlie?
Well, we've spent a lot of time this show talking about the bad news for J.B. Pritzker coming out of the audit of the LaSalle Veterans Home. Let me end by mentioning that there was some good news for the governor as well, in that Fitch Ratings late this week, or last week, I guess it'd be now, raised the state of Illinois' credit rating for its general obligation bonds by two notches to BBB plus, which is the second rating agency to raise our rating in the last couple of weeks. And it's the fourth time that we've got a credit upgrade in the last year. And so this is something that Pritzker can tout, that Illinois is on a sound financial path.
And actually, as we were sitting here taping, S&P decided to do the same thing. And we have been raised another two notches by that credit rating agency.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and also Heather Sharone of WTTW and Chicago Tonight. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.